Welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the week show from the Mac Net for the the Bagel Tech Network, talking about all things Macintosh. I'm thrown because I was reading Australian Shiraz in the chat room. Oh, I got my priorities right, if nothing else. White label with a horse on it. Thank you, Steve. We're here to discuss the week's happenings in Mac, and for once, Apple have done something worth talking about. Oh, yes. We had the old keynote on Monday. And it was bloody fantastic. It's the best one that they've had in absolutely years, apart from, according to SF Drum in the track room, the one in 2007 when they had strippers, but I don't remember that myself. But joining me to discuss this, our fantastic panel as normal, we've got Dom McAllister out in WWDC, and he's not woken up yet, but if he does wake up, he's going to dial in, so we've kept a line open for him. Next to him would be Kyle Swagger. Hello, mate.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, good. Are you excited this week?
I'm excited that you're excited, because I don't have the dev thing.
There you go. You see, I do. So, I've been running iOS 5 for a while now, and it's fine and dandy. Below him, got Dr. Happy Mac, our resident tech on Mac, the man that knows everything, and fixer to the stars.
Toot toot.
Drinking an Amstel, good man.
Yes, in memory of Will, who's not with us today, I am holding the alcohol fort.
We should point out that Will's not dead in that statement. in memory of Will.
God bless you, Will.
And all who sailed in you. It's Will's birthday. He's 40, so happy birthday, Will. Andrew, how was the island?
It was lovely. It's not a gravel pit in the middle. It's a lovely private island that their friends of ours own. And it was really nice and lovely and sunny. And you just pitched up there about 3 o'clock and opened the beer. And that was that, really, till Sunday. Fantastic.
Oh, good man. I'm very jealous.
And it's got its own spaceship.
What, like the Apple one that they're going to have?
No, this is a better, because it's a real spaceship.
Oh.
Yes.
It's been to space then?
Well, it's part of a Blue Streak rocket, which in the 1960s was the British space program.
Yes.
And they built three of them, and they shipped them off to Australia. Then as soon as they got to Australia, the British government phoned them up and said, "We've run out of money. You can launch one." So they launched one with a satellite, which is the only fully British satellite launch ever. And they packed up the other two and they brought them back again. And one of them's in a museum in Germany, and one of them is in this chap's on his property.
Fantastic, because they were, of course, the Blue Streak rocket was the one where they famously worked out how to make them so thin, though, you know, they were wafer thin and super light. Yeah. And also they worked out the reverse bulkhead for fitting more in. Very, very good.
Yeah, and you can climb it. He's got it mounted up, and you can go underneath it, and you can look up, and all the rocket motors are still inside it and everything. You can see all the stuff still there.
That sounds vaguely illegal.
I'll send you some pictures.
Oh, please, yeah. Have you got a gun license? No, but I've got a Blue Streak rocket in the back that's fully usable. And next to him, standing in for Will Green, thank you very much, mate, Alex G-Fox.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm just mesmerised by the story of having a rocket.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you know, I've got mates with fast cars, but I don't know anyone with their own rocket. I mean, that really is impressive. You've impressed me before, but this is... You've almost made me silent with impressedness.
Well, there's a feat in itself. Well done. The week in Apple news. It's not been a great week for Apple, as well as they've released their cloud syncing-y Wi-Fi thing, and allegedly they've stolen it from a guy named Greg Hughes here in Birmingham. And there's a lot of to and fro over that. But Greg's not suing at the moment, so we don't think there's going to be any issue come from it. There's also been a pile of stuff associated with the stuff that was launched at WWDC, and of course they've had their plans passed for the mothership, which it looks kind of like a Pentagon, except it's not the Pentagon, it's circular, so it's very space age and very glassy and very pleasant and very nice, and apparently there isn't a single pane of glass in it that's straight, they're all curved, unless there's a gay glass that I've missed out on, but there we go. Right, shall we start with the keynote? Because that's probably got most of the real news of the week in. We had Lion, we had iOS 5, and then we had the iCloud stuff. So let's start with Lion. Any first impressions?
Kind of what we've seen. You know, I think that out of the whole keynote, that was probably the thing. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Hmm. Anyone impressed?
They've sorted out the server. At least we now know what's happening with server as well, which is a plus. Yeah.
Fill us in, won't you?
Well, obviously, I mean, Lion is going to be an upgrade only available from the App Store. So you'll need to be running 10.6.6.
Well, no, there's a good question, Andrew, and I want to know your thoughts on this, because as a person who probably fixes stuff for computer, for local residents and stuff, you want to do a fresh install of 10.7. That's not going to be possible, is it?
At the moment, nobody knows. What Lion will do when you install it is it is supposedly going to create a invisible partition on your hard drive for disaster recovery, which is great, but it's not going to help you if you want to put a bigger drive in or anything else. No, I mean, there's going to be a way around it. You'll be able to burn a DMG to a DVD or Apple will make it available as a USB stick, I'm sure.
Which then again defeats the object of the fact that they've stuck it in the App Store to start with. If they were going to do that, why didn't they just stick it out on disk and be done with it?
Oh, because they've got the App Store. They've got to, you know, it's their store.
But it's OS. Yeah, you see, OS is via download. Just don't seem to want
to. It's a gig download.
Yeah.
I think Apple's, you know, we're getting to the time now. We always talk about physical media. I think we're finally arriving there that we don't so much need to gravitate towards that anymore. I mean, to me, obviously the CD has gone to the wayside as far as operating system goes. I don't think Ubuntu would like to hear that, but you know, every you know, these operations are getting so big now. It's a DVD. And most people don't have Blu-ray drives yet, at least that accessible in a lot of computers. I think obviously, yeah, it's their store. It's the way to go. But they're gonna have to give us a way that we can do a fresh or a clean install, particularly with all the malware we've seen in the last few weeks.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Oh. Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, I just think it's very odd. I suppose putting it in the Mac store means that the day they launch it, half the people on the planet that own a Mac are going to click download. So financially, that's probably quite a clever idea, because you're going to build up some excitement. But me personally, you know, if I've got to have it on a disc. I've got to have something that I physically own, and I know when this thing goes bang. I mean, it's quite a few occasions you stick a disc in the Mac when you want to do a disk utility and you want to do it, you know, without certain things running. You know, there are times you actually need a disk. And also I'm a bit worried, you know, you burn a disk yourself, you're a photographer, you probably do it as well, and you go back to a disk that you burnt 2 or 3 years ago and it's corrupted, even if you've never taken it out of the box. So I much prefer the idea of having something pressed in a factory properly. And, you know, something that I can keep on the shelf. So maybe they'll have a dual thing. You'll buy it on the download and you'll be able to pay an extra few dollars and they'll post you a disc. I don't know.
Well, now here's my... excuse me. Now, here's my thinking. Right at the start of the keynote, they came out with all this stuff about Apple's fantastic. We've had a growth on growth time. The rest of the market is decreasing. We're increasing. And one of the things that they clearly said was, you know, we are 3/4 of the new netbook sales each year. So it was very clear from the start that when they went to Lion, they're almost turning their back on desktop users. They're saying, unless you've got a trackpad, you're not going to get the benefit of Lion. You've got to go down this idea of using trackpad, and the majority market is going to be the netbooks, because that's where we're selling most of them. We're responding to market demand, and I get that. That's fine. I go along with it. But as far as having the download and buying a disc and that kind of thing, if you're talking about the netbook market and you're talking about things like the Air doesn't have a drive anyway. You're putting it through a USB. USB is probably going to go the way eventually. Apple are going to want you to go towards Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt's not going to have an operating system on a key that you plug into the mini display port, I don't think, anytime soon. So where are you going to get it from? You're going to get it from the cloud. Is there a danger then that Apple are going to end up creating some kind of almost BIOS-like thing where when you turn a computer on with a brand new drive in, you know, you have to have something on there, a partition that automatically boots. Otherwise, you're stuffed. So Apple have got you by the short and curlies on the hardware stuff again.
Yeah. I was just thinking as you were talking, you're right, because it's only their desktop computers, really. I mean, if you think about your iPad and your iPhone, they've never come with any software that, you know, you haven't got any other version of the software. You either plug it in to an internet enabled machine to upgrade it or download it or play with it or back it up.
Yeah.
You know, so I suppose in that respect, it's what they've been doing anyway. They're just bringing that theory to the desktop and maybe we'll just get used to it.
Because
it never occurred to me that I don't have a backup of my Mac software on my phone anywhere other than on my Mac.
No, my thought is that the walled garden just had the door bricked up.
Yeah, I think you could possibly right, and that never even occurred to me until you mentioned it.
Well, the thing about it is, I mean, we're talking about, you know, yeah, okay, we don't have a restore disk for our iPhone, but we do have a way to restore it, and we do have to plug it in, and you do physically have to download the software, so you can do a restore on it. What are you going to do if your system's corrupt? You've got no way to get online. You've got nothing, you know, which happens a lot. What if your hard drive fails? There's a lot of possibilities here.
Well, maybe it will work in reverse. Maybe you'll plug your iMac into your iPhone, which will be Wi-Fi linked, and you'll be using your iPhone to download the software back onto your iMac.
Yeah, no, there's a point in the chat room from Steve saying he took his SuperDrive out and put an OptiBay 500 gig drive in. I've done the same on my laptop. I've got 2 1-terabyte drives in there, and I'm chucked full of photos and God knows what in. And I haven't missed my drive at all, not once. I've got an external drive I can plug in if I really need to, but I've stopped even plugging that in there. If anything, it's only to rip DVDs.
Something keeps telling me my gut that Apple is going to do a web-based operating system like Chrome. I don't know why. I don't know why, but my gut keeps telling me this.
I think the problem that you've got is there's just, with the launch of Lion, there's a lot of things that they said that they're going to do, but there's a lot of questions that are developed from that statement. And at the moment, there's no answers for it. I can't see that they can't have, as Andy says, they can't have not have a USB key of some description. Or some other method of transferring data, even if it's a Wi-Fi thing and you can get it off another computer, or you know, you've got your desktop Mac and you can download via desktop once you've enabled Wi-Fi. I don't know.
At the end of the day, the bottom line is that, you know, in millions of homes all around the world, the Mac is a consumer device, and the technology and the infrastructure to reinstall and support the OS in any way other than a physical plug-in media of some sort doesn't exist yet. I mean, 10.8, 10.9, whatever, there might be technologies, there might be strategies that Apple can implement, but here and now, the situation is that it's great if you could download it from the App Store, and that's how most people are going to get Lion, but realistically, the only way, I mean, that Apple can deliver the operating system for a clean install is either a DVD or a USB stick. There's no way around it. They have to do it.
Wow. And whether you think they will or not is the next question, and whether they've got the balls to hold out.
There's no way around it. They won't plug it as a thing. At the moment, all the hype is around it's via the App Store. They're focusing the media on the App Store. Yeah. They're focusing it on how to get it really easily. Mm. But after that's gone, it will just be another operating system. I don't think it'll be on a DVD. I think it'll come on a USB stick, but it's got to come on some physical media because that's the way that there is no other infrastructure in place for a consumer device that doesn't piss your customers off too much.
Steve in the chat room saying that it's a software service for everything, but what you'll need is a browser. Well, what are you going to hang the browser off as an OS to actually then get online to get the OS down? It's you're really stuck in a catch-22 with that if they don't do something that's physical. What about features in Lion? I mean, touch gestures and everything sounds fantastic, but are we going to see Apple maybe making the iMac into a touchscreen, or the laptops are now going to go into touchscreens for the multi-gesture?
No, it doesn't work. You can't touch the screen all day with your hand. It just, I mean, trackpad gestures are where it's going.
Mm.
You can't.
I could see the iMac. Sorry, Andrew. I could see the iMac
going to touch gestures.
For some reason, I don't know why. I mean, Andrew, you actually said this a couple of weeks ago, that there's people out there that for some reason that kids that they want to touch it. They want to, you know, it's natural.
Do it. But if you sat on your computer and you've got your arm in front of you and you're touching the screen after 10 minutes of working like that, your arm feels like it's going to fall off.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I never personally would do it, but I could see it definitely being on. And the notebook to me, I don't know why. I can't see that happening. I've got a keyboard in front of me. I don't know. I might as well just have an iPad. But for some reason, I could sit here and do stuff. Push it out of the way. I don't know. For some reason, I could see that going forward.
So what we're saying is not a mouse interaction style of thing. So I'm not dragging my finger around all over the screen to get it where I want to go.
Right.
But what you're saying is, you know, if I want to go through spaces or expose, instead of having to use gestures on a touchpad, I can do a swipe with my hand across the screen to scroll stuff backwards and forwards. That'd be kind of cool.
I mean, it's a nice idea, but I think the ergonomics of how you use a desk would have to change completely. Because I mean, I just reached out to my screen just to feel how it would work. And I mean, Andrew said 10 minutes of using it. I'm really out of shape, but I think 10 seconds of using it would be enough for me. But if everything was sort of 45 degrees below you, then I can see it working. I just think in an office environment, you'd exhaust yourself immediately. So I mean, we are sedentary, and nothing's going to make us any better.
Yeah, I mean, it's Steve in the chat room again saying I've done it on my MacBook Pro, and I've got to say, when I've been playing on my iPod for a long period of time, there's times I've wanted to touch the screen and swipe backwards and forwards through applications. It would be absolutely fantastic. And now we've got this full screen approach, you know, unless you haven't got a trackpad. And I've got to say, I struggled with my trackpad. I enjoyed it for a long period of time, but then I started getting a lot of pains in my wrist from holding my hand elevated to use it, and I stopped and went back to the Magic Mouse, and the pounds have disappeared. Now, I'm not saying that Apple gave me carpal tunnel syndrome or anything like that, but it wasn't comfortable for after a long period of time doing it.
If you had a dual screen setup, I mean, you push it to another way. I just think we're getting so used to it. And I personally don't know if I would like it or not. I mean, right now, sitting here doing this, I don't know, maybe after a while, maybe it would get on my nerves, but I can't see let's click the Apple logo over here and, oh, I want this. Or I don't see that. I see it more of just being a way to not completely eliminate the mouse, but in a way that you have this more interaction actually with your computer, which I think Apple's actually literally what they're trying to do. They want, particularly with consumers that are buying all of these iPhones and iPads, I think they want to bring that over to another platform. And being the iMac is their most all-in-one unit, I think, is the one that would be the one they would go for.
A question from Drummer in the chat room saying, what about an Apple Patent a while ago that looked at taking an iMac and pushing it into a hinge that let it go flat or flatter so you could make it like a desk? That's a good point, because I remember that patent story, and that would be huge. That would be really, really good.
But you'd still need it lower than you. I mean, for instance, when you were saying that you feel like touching your MacBook Pro, I imagine you only feel like doing that when it's on your lap and you're looking down on it, as opposed to being on a desk level where you're reaching out to do it.
I could do it on a desk, but
if you think about it, because I was thinking about it earlier, all the touch paddy sort of iPhones and iPads and this sort of thing, they're very good to open up something that you're only going to look at or only going to read, like a browser or a game or something. To actually work on the machine, you know, photo manipulation or typing or doing anything else, touch is completely useless. You know, so
agreed, you'd have to sell a keyboard.
Yeah, it's only to be able to open an application or flick through menus. It's no use for anything else.
What about the changes as well to expose and spaces? I mean, they've taken those and shoved them together into this kind of mission control thing where you can swipe and expand using multitask gestures again. I think that's got to be a positive, hasn't it? Because expose was not particularly brilliant, and spaces was a non-starter for me. I never got into using it at all.
I still don't know if I'll go there, though. You know, it's like they lost me years ago. Don't get me wrong, it looks great now. It is the right way to go, but I still can't. I don't know. I still can't force myself to just even go that direction. I'm so used to the way I do things now that maybe it's for the new user.
Maybe. Andy?
Yeah, it seems to me it's very much they've taken two things that completely failed to grab the public's attention and mashed them together in a mad hope that the third thing will pop out of a splendid celebrity. I just think it's lovely. It looks good. And when they explain it to you, you can see the reason behind it and you think, God, yeah, that's brilliant. And it just has no easy integration into people's everyday workflow.
Yeah.
It just, you know, even if things are easy, if there's no perceived benefit, then people don't adopt it. And I think that the fact that you have to come out of something to look at it and then go back into something, people just say, well, I'll just stay where I was and click on the thing. you know, I can't say. I think it's going to be the same thing as the whatchamacallit diddly that nobody uses, widgets. You know, lovely, yeah. Brilliant idea, dead.
Well, I use Expose.io a fair bit, but particularly for things like opening up all the windows I've got and then going back. But Spaces never worked that well because everything was in Windows. I mean, I think Spaces, perhaps, do you think it comes more into its own because they're now talking about full-screen applications? So swiping from space to space is now swiping from app to application. And if Spaces had done that to start with, it would have had more success, maybe.
Yeah, that's a very sort of iPad-y thing going on, isn't it? That might be slightly have more traction. The fact that if iPhoto's in full screen and everything's in full screen, then you are just assigning one app per space and effectively, you know, swiping from app to app. That's possibly a goer. Mm. It depends how the full screen apps takes off as well, I suppose.
It's funny we're saying swiping too.
Yeah, just, well, I don't use. I mean, I've got iPhoto 11, and I banged it into full screen mode when I saw it, and I haven't used that since.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's a couple of things I like about it, but again, they contradict exactly what I said before. They only really make sense to me if you're using a touchscreen. This being able to see all your applications and those applications being in folders much as they are on iOS rather than on the desktop, that makes sense to me. But again, it seems to sort of thing you want to touch. It would be nice to be able to not have to put, I mean, at the moment I have an applications folder at the bottom of my screen which I click from the dock and it opens up much the same way, but it would be nice to have all my graphic stuff in one place and things like that. But again, it's something I want to touch. But this full screen thing just seems to me like tab web browsing. I mean, that's more or less all it feels like. You're flicking from one tab to the other. And if you were doing that with your hand, with swiping, much as they showed the way Safari is going to work for flicking between tabs in Safari, that works. But that only works because it's a physical act of flicking through pages in a book. It's never felt right, even when you, say, use a PDF reader and you use the sort of the flicking page thing. It doesn't feel right. It's not so bad when you use the trackpad because you feel like you're actually flicking through pages. But if you want to emulate the natural way of doing things, you need to do it naturally rather than do it with a mouse or anything else.
I think the other thing as well is with the layout of the iOS style thing with the icons on the screen, I might be being a bit of a Mac snob here, but having icons all over your screen was a classic Windows thing. It's never been a Mac thing. You know, you can drag stuff to your desktop, but I can't stand having tons of icons on my desktop. I'll have one that's got desktop written on it, and everything that I want to store on the desktop, I just drag over there and then drag into the desktop icon. But I don't want sheaves of icons. And having the iOS thing with sheaves of icons across all of my stuff, you're then getting into the issue of dragging off and clicking. So, you know, if I think I'm clicking in the application and the borderline of the window is very, very narrow, the chances are I could end up be clicking in an application which is underneath it, and then that starts and brings that to the front. Oh, for God's sake, go away, shut down. You know, I can just see glitches with that.
Launchpad hides your desktop, though, doesn't it? When you click Launchpad and it pops up the iPad like grid of apps, then it does actually hide the desktop behind it.
Got you.
So it's not like a physical thing where they're there all the time on your desktop. I mean, it's basically just replicating if you've got a folder for applications in the dock and you've got it set to grid. That's pretty much what they've done. They've just moved it from grid view on the folder side of the dock to calling it Launchpad.
Yeah, that's exactly how I do it. What would have been nice if they'd have given you the option of, say, three docks, one on the left, one on the bottom, and one on the right, and you could then decide what you want on each of those docks that, you know, they're invisible until you lean on them. So you could do it in that way. You could have the dock on the left being your photo software, the dock on the right being something else, and the dock on the bottom being general.
Well, I've also done using aliases. I've made folders and then created icons for those folders and put them down the dock using stacks, so that when I click on them, you see a representation of photography, and then when you click on that, all of your photographic applications come up in a fan. Off the thing. I mean, that's very easy to do in the existing OS. It's just a bit, I did a bit that of work. When
we tested all the browsers out, just so I could flick between the browsers.
Yeah.
I mean, you say expose. The only reason I ever use that is when everything is such a mess, I've lost my way. I hit expose and I can actually find the screen I'm looking for.
Yeah, everything goes out and you're like, okay, got you. Click it.
And that's it. Click it. Everything goes back. Because especially when you're working on a photo, you could have 10 different things open. And it's a lifesaver. But as a general rule, I wouldn't use it.
What about the document history saving thing, Kyle? Did you? Because that really kind of grabbed me as something that was one of the few things that I saw online that really was worthwhile.
Yeah, I liked it. There's a lot. You know how it, to sum up the whole thing, I mean, when it comes to Line, there's a lot of little things that make a lot of sense now, and it's kind of makes, I almost feel like we're polishing it off a bit, you know, instead of really adding to, we're just making better. But I did like that. Although I must say, though, I never have been big with using documents for some reason at all. It's, I don't know. I guess I just don't use my Mac in quite that way.
Yeah. Andy?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's easy to look at all the lovely pictures and of things like mission control and launch pad and stuff. But I think the stuff that makes Line worth having is all the other stuff. It's the resume thing and the auto saving and the versions thing, which is obviously building on the time machine technology. I love it, the idea of just working away and not having to, I mean, Command S, it's been around since the beginning of the Mac, and I remember back in the day years ago when I worked in a design agency and we'd have Photoshop documents open in OS 8 and things, and you'd be working away photoshopping and the studio manager would come round and you'd be having work then. If she saw that the document you were working on was called Untitled One, she just pulled the plug out of the Mac.
Oh, jeez. Lesson learned, though.
She only did it once. So it was, you know, it's just such a, this, oh, save document, you know, just to have, yeah. It's just such a smart thing. And I think it's a real differentiator from Windows. It just makes OS X another nicer place to be when you're working. All of this stuff, auto save, versions and resume, it makes OS X a nicer place to be when you're working.
Yeah, I think did anyone look at the overall updates within Lion and feel a little bit like they've been left cold? Because I certainly did. I expected a lot more functionality changes within the fundamental OS. And I know there's a lot of extra stuff in there, but the changes that were made, I'm not sure I wanted those changes anyway.
No, I quite like it as an overall package. There was a concern. Now, I love the idea of being able to save automatically as you go along. And Andrew might be able to help me out here. But if you were using an SSD, then constantly saving, it wouldn't slow down your machine and it really wouldn't put any wear and tear on any part of your machine. But if you've got a hard drive, which is constantly being written to the whole time that you're working, because you can't hold it in RAM, because if something fails, you lose the RAM. So is that wear and tear? I mean, I know you can't see into the future, but could that constant wear and tear actually damage or slow down the machine or do your hard drive no favour in the long run? Sorry, Andrew.
Well, I mean, for sure, there's going to be some extra overhead on the hard drive. I don't think it's going to be... I think you won't notice it. I can't see it being a major issue.
Oh, okay.
No, I think it's the right speed's not going to be that much. Kyle, what do you think of the overall impressions of Line?
I like where we're headed. I think a lot of things of what we're seeing right now is all underneath the hood. I think it has everything to do with the cloud. And I think once we get in the cloud and we start seeing what it's like in the cloud, I think we're going to get a real impression of what exactly we're going to be dealing with iOS 5, Line, and all of it. And I think that's going to bring everything together. It's either going to work, God bless you.
Gizzle tight.
And I think that's when we're going to see it really all come together. It's either, like I said, it's either going to be sunny in the clouds, or it's going to be one hell of a typhoon.
And on that metaphor,
yeah, it's funny. Ewan, reading the what's been written in the chat room and your reply saying, you know, saying what do you want for £30 and etc. It's true, because when they brought Snow Leopard out, Tiger to Leopard was a really big jump. It was an amazing.
It was.
It seemed like an amazing jump. and we paid for that. And then they brought out Snow Leopard, and we thought, you know what? Okay, it's a little bit better, but it certainly doesn't warrant all that money for
it. And to be fair to Apple, they did say this is 90% under the hood changes.
Exactly.
Okay.
But then they do the same thing here between Snow Leopard and Lion, and it's not visually that much of a change. So maybe, you know, they're saying, you know what, we can't get away with charging $130 for this because of, even though we know it's dramatic, it doesn't look it. So we're going to do what we did between Leopard and Snow Leopard and make it feel like it's a paid upgrade as opposed to a paid new operating system. And also downloading it via the App Store makes it feel like an upgrade rather than a new operating system. So that sort of makes sense to why they're only charging the amount they are.
Go ahead, Carl.
I was going to say, and cheaper. It makes it cheaper, too. I mean, if we're talking about that they're, even though we want them, obviously, I think we're all in agreement that we want them to do some type of physical media with this thing. That may be why the cost is down, because we're just downloading this thing. It's literally, I feel like it's just kind of like an add-on. Like, here, oh, great, I'm going to add on Lion now through the App Store. That part of me makes me feel like, am I really getting a new operating system here? I mean, or am I just throwing crap on top of it? Obviously, it's not crap, because it looks really impressive, but... You know,
here's the thing I've just discovered deep in the Apple file thing. Reinstalling OS X Lion, if you put a new hard drive in, is that your Time Machine backup is now bootable in restore mode.
So they're forcing you to have Time Machine.
Exactly. Oh, there's those bricks you were talking about, Ewan.
OS X can be reinstalled from your Mac using Time Machine in restore mode.
But you've always been able to do that anyway.
No, well, time, I don't like well,
that. No, you couldn't boot, could you? You could restore it from a backup once you'd booted with an OS, but you couldn't.
Oh, that's true. You're right.
You couldn't boot from Time Machine.
So will there be a part of Time Machine that when you download it, it will save it as a DMG type of file?
Yeah, the it looks like there's some jiggery poker going on. It says that it will allow, it allows the Mac to be booted into recovery mode with no OS, and then you use Time Machine to put the rest back on. So it looks like it's a firmware level upgrade that allows the Mac a very, very limited boot, just enough to see your Time Machine back up.
Exactly. And then just as Ewan said, it's like a BIOS.
Yes,
pseudo BIOS. I'm not saying it is BIOS, but yeah.
No, well done, Ewan.
Hey, see, I'm not that dumb.
There you go.
Well, maybe I am, but...
That's how it's done, then.
That's how it's done. I was right. Oh, I could love being like... No, all right, the next thing was iOS 5. There was... And I got to say, for the whole keynote, iOS 5 was the thing that got me pumping my fist a little bit more and whooping and hollering here while I was watching it. 200 million iOS devices are going to get this OS, and nearly 50% of the total mobile OS market is Apple's already. So they're hitting a lot of subscribers very quickly with big changes here straight off the bat. Anything that leapt out in iOS 5 for anyone that was a beaut upgrade?
Wi-Fi syncing.
Oh, I got to say,
Wi-Fi syncing.
When we saw they showed the Wi-Fi thing, and I can't remember what the slide was that they showed, but it kind of suggested that they were going to do Wi-Fi, and then you thought, oh, hang on, is that just AirPlay or is that actual Wi-Fi syncing? And then they went away from it. It was kind of, oh, no, they're not going to do Wi-Fi syncing. And then it came back with it, and he said, yes, we're going to do Wi-Fi syncing. And I was like, yeah! You know, I was going to offer sexual favours at that point to Steve Jobs, because it's something that everybody's wanted.
But isn't that peculiar? Because I was listening to it at that point and the place erupted. And isn't that peculiar that you've got a company as big as Apple writing some software as big as this, and something that was so fundamentally, basically important has taken to iOS 5 to be available?
Yeah, true.
I mean, the frustration of it not being available, it's amazing it's taken this long to get there. And just as one more point, it's taken how many years have Apple been writing systems for us to get to 10.7? Well, the rate they're going, by the time the iPhone is sort of 10 years old, they're going to be on to iOS 77 at this rate. The upgrades seem to be coming so, so fast.
Yeah, but to be fair, they're going through 4.1, 4.2, 4.3. And this is, you know, we're only at 4.3.3 for the current system, aren't you? So...
Yeah, it just seems like the actual... I mean, it started off at 3, didn't it? I can't remember now.
I think what you're going to see now is a reiteration of the iOS numbering based on the phones. So version 4 came out with iPhone 4. Version 5 is going to come out with iPhone 5 and iOS 6. You won't see an iOS 6 between version 5 of the iPhone and version 6 of the iPhone.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Steve has pointed out what I'm excited to see. I don't know why. I guess because we're all Apple people, is iMessaging.
iMessaging. So they've caught up to BlackBerry. I mean, like my first exposure to BlackBerry messaging was my little cousin, my niece, and she was sitting tweeting away on the thing. I said, have you got enough credit for your phone while you're up at our house? She said, no. I said, right, I'll get you some credit. And then she's staring on texting away, and I'm saying, how the hell are you texting without any credit? She said, oh, no, BBM. I'm like, what? So she explained BBM to me, and it was a fantastic idea. It's massive amongst student populations and school kids. So iMessaging really did it for you, Kyle.
Well, it didn't really do it for me. It's like, hey, nice feature, nice to finally have it. I mean, it kind of goes back to Alex's point, you know, oh, we waited for so long for this. And that one, that one could have been in 4 already. I don't know if they're just trying to bunch things together to give us this big bulk package where there's so much to talk about. But to me, that one could have came in the last update. You know, I think we were all disappointed in the last, 4.3 update. It's just like there's nothing. So I guess we're all getting excited about 5, and they're just throwing everything in the pot there. But I like it. I like the idea that, I can text the wife, you guys. I mean, I love the idea of that. And it is something that needed to be there. And I think it's a direct poke in the eye of BlackBerry. It's just taken forever to do it.
What was interesting, though, was after they did that, there was a huge question to some of the telcos saying, are you happy about the messaging thing? And there was telco saying, what messaging thing? What's iMessage? what have they done? Apple hasn't cleared this with anybody. They've just announced that it's coming, and that's the end of it. And all the telcos have got to absorb it.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's going to pick up the data charges? Because most of us, we have free or unlimited text, but if you want to send a picture, they'll charge you. So this is going to now get past them being able to charge us for multimedia messaging. I mean, at the moment on my iPhone, I just email anything because why should I pay for something when I don't have to? But, you know, are they going to now drop our data bundles even further to get back some of what they're about to lose again by iMessaging?
Yeah,
are we going to end up having to pay for it anyway?
Or is the traditional phone dead?
The traditional phone is dead now. There's text messaging is a done deal and gone. The only thing you've got that's beautiful with text messaging is the fact that you're sending it to somebody on any platform, whereas this is iOS to iOS only. It's going to be great for you and me, Kyle, but it's of no value whatsoever for me to someone who's got a BlackBerry.
It's interesting because while ago they were saying they were going to bring out BBM on the iPhone as an app, and there was a date for a release and all the rest of it, and it never happened. Now, did it never happen because Apple said, hold on a minute, why are we going to let them jump on our platform? We might as well do this ourselves. But it was all ready for launch, and we all had a date. I think it was April, and it never happened. So is that why?
Couple of questions in the chat room. Are we sure that iOS 5 is going to come in October and not iOS 4S? Because I think 5 is going to come.
I would say it's 5. Although it probably says that because we had 3GS, 3G, 3GS, 4.
I think they called Colin 3GS. I didn't think that was a good branding for them. I think they know it. They should have gone to 4 there, and this should be 5.
5 ties into with everything, so it would make sense.
The other thing is Games in the chat room saying that BlackBerry, apparently, BBM is a shared revenue between them and the network, so they pick up half the charge and the networks pick up the rest.
Well, I can't see Apple doing that.
I can't see it either, but you never know, eh? Even they may buckle. Anything else in iOS 5 that leapt out at you?
I love the look of the new slightly more sensible lock screen and the notifications. That looks like a big usability jump.
All I can say is notifications are beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I don't know if they're showing up on my iPad here. There we go. So on your home screen, let me just change cameras. There we go. On the home screen, you've got nice little small notifications now. They don't necessarily pay a tune when they come on board. They don't vibrate necessarily. And if you're in an application, notifications realise that they don't want, you don't want them popping up front so that they take stuff away from you. And they look absolutely gorgeous. I came back from doing a thing with a keynote presentation yesterday. I had, as soon as I closed the phone down, I had three notifications there. Now, previously, if it had been an IM coming through, the instant message would have cut straight across the presentation software and I'd have had to clear it and cancel it before I could have gone back in and started up Keynote again. Sorry, Carl, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, now we can finally stop hearing crap from Android users.
Because they've got that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it did take it. Another thing, it actually took a while. I mean, more and more I analyze this, it's more like, hey, it took a while. It took a while. We've got it now. Makes me happy, though, because I have to admit, on the Android platform, the notifications is one of the nicer features, but it's coming. So, you know, I don't really care. I'm still very much in love with my iPhone over an Android device any day, just because of the fragmentation that still is going on.
Drummer says that. There is always, sorry.
Drummer says that's me kicked out of the iOS developer program for certain now.
They're going to say that there is always the argument that Apple can't put, someone else has a good idea, Apple can't put it in immediately because it really does smack of they've just copied somebody else's idea. If they wait for some big upgrade, they can say, well, no, this is the natural progression of our software. So, you know, they can't jump on board. Oh, look, Android have got that. We're going to put it in on the next update. No, they've got to wait until, you know, it's a major upgrade and say, no, this is just natural development.
It's all beautiful marketing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
not to mention Growl again because of, you know, it is his birthday after all, but it's a similar sort of thing. I mean, it would be nice if they were more transparent. I'd quite like the a function to make the notifications transparent rather than actually, you know, blocking out too much of the background, but that's something they can add in the future.
They are semi-opaque.
Not quite, that's good.
Not quite as semi-opaque as I think you probably would want, but they're not completely blocked out. What's the word I'm looking for?
Transparent.
No, they are slightly transparent. They're not
translucent.
They're not totally opaque. There we go. I got them the wrong way around.
Yeah, I mean, what you could do, I suppose, they could just have a slider, much as you do with the brightness, and you can just slide up and down on how much you want to see or not.
Well, again, I haven't had enough time to sit and go and play with the OS, so, I mean, I'm going to go in and sit and play with functionality. There's text messaging and ringtone subtle changes as well that are in there that are fantastic. Yeah. Camera wants to, the chat room wants to talk about the camera. They've taken the camera and put the trigger button now on the top using the plus button, which is what Camera Plus did a while ago. I was quite surprised at that, and I was a bit disappointed unless they've sorted Camera Plus out with a few quid for coming up with the idea in the first place. Anyone else?
To me they just copied it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Complete negative.
You know, they've limited the amount of buttons on the machine and you haven't got an awful lot of other options. You either use that or not. Possibly they could have, I don't know if they could do it, maybe in a new incarnation of the iPhone, make the mute button touch sensitive. So all you have to do is actually touch it and the resistance of your finger takes a picture, because that would avoid a lot of camera shake.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that you'll say on full zoom is that this camera is very, very wobbly. You've got to brace yourself against something, otherwise there's no way you're going to get a nice still picture, even in good daylight. I took a couple of test photos with it, and while you're zoomed out, it's fantastic, but as soon as you get it on the full zoom, the camera is all over the place. It's impossible to hold it still. Lisa Bettany was behind the Camera Plus. Thanks, chat room, yeah. The other thing is as well that we found out, there's a fault on the HDR software in low light. So where you've got a section of the camera that's low light, it actually creates a shadow image, which is a duplicate of the original image. And also by default today, this morning on the photo show, we found out that the meta tagging meant that in anything other than an Apple application, the image comes out upside down, because the camera is now no longer in the top left hand corner. It's down in the bottom right hand corner, which was Alex's little find. Well done, mate.
But all these things are for you developers to pass on to Apple to fix before us mere mortals get hold of it.
And I have done so, mate, yes.
Well done.
Absolutely. Exposure lock and autofocus lock as well. Not bad. but could be a lot better. Once you've touched the image, it's very difficult to get the thing to go back into auto mode. There's no return to auto. It automatically then just focuses on the point that you've touched, which is difficult. But there's photo editing, and the photo editing is passable. It kind of mirrors, you know, not happy enough with stealing from the student in Birmingham, stealing from Camera Plus. They've kind of stolen a little bit off Adobe, I think, with that one as well as. So it's not brilliant. But iOS 5 really had like the split keyboard as well on the iPad. That looks gorgeous. I haven't had a play with that though. And wireless syncing was obviously the big thing there. iCloud. What did we see about iCloud that really kind of have pumped us up? Kyle?
Loved it. I loved it.
The whole thing.
I love what it can be, should I say. Well, first off, I'm happy about little trickles I've heard out of Apple that seem to be that's kind of the direction they went. So I was kind of, I felt good about that.
So you got the trickling right, thanks to a certain person.
Yeah, I got some trickling right out of there. I we're hearing, you know, that we're going to have this. There, what I really love about it, I think, to get my thoughts together, is that I have CDs. I'm going to put in my iTunes, and by God, they're going to back them up to basically up to 18 million songs for me for free.
Yeah, because you're American.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you guys, unfortunately, are going to get it till 2012.
Exactly. Don't come in here swaggering, boy.
Sorry.
Yeah, we're
not. I think that's really great of them.
Sign up.
We're not going to get any interaction with the iCloud and iTunes in the iCloud until at least 2012, and that's still talking about things like licensing and that kind of stuff. And I think, to be honest, you're not perhaps going to get it at all if you're not careful. I really don't see Netflix ever coming over here to the UK because of licensing, and I think that unless they sort themselves out with the BPI, and the BPI are notoriously militant over licensing issues, there's a good possibility that iCloud won't come here. And certainly I don't think you'll see iTunes Match coming out in the UK at all, maybe.
You'll see it with iTunes for music, guaranteed.
I did notice that Kyle's, I don't know if it was prediction or his excitement about the 256 kilobytes on iTunes download has happened, because I downloaded something yesterday and it was at 256. So I'm sure that will make Kyle very happy.
No, I'm not happy yet. I still want lossless, honestly. I was happy with the increased thing, but I firmly feel that Apple is going to get into what we call the audiophile category, like they kind of have done with the iTunes LP. I think we're going to go another direction of that, and I think there's going to be an audiophile section too, probably sometime next year, I would say.
As long as you've got the option, then that's fine and dandy.
Well, I don't know if it'll be for everything. I think it'll just probably be for certain albums, if it's classical, or if, you know, there used to be this old catalog stuff a long time ago called actually I think they're still in business, called Original Master Recording, and they used to do a lot of reissues and these kind of things. Maybe, you know, for something that's definitely aimed towards the audiophile, for sure.
Andy, what was your iCloud standout?
Well, I first of all was the bit when I was absolutely adamant, apart from my sarcastic list last week, the bit that I would have stood behind was when Carl was saying, I want it to be free. And I was like, yeah, this is Apple. And of course, what do they bloody do?
Free.
It's free. So, yeah, completely 180 degrees arse about tit there on that one. I was pleased to see that Steve Jobs did address history rather than painting over it, which has been wont to do. And he said, like, you know, iCloud, we love it. It sounds fantastic, but you're all thinking these are the guys that bought me Mobile Me.
Yeah, I was having the current problems I've currently got. I was quite impressed with him saying it's not our finest hour.
Yeah, and basically saying, look, you know, we've got our shit together on this. Trust me. So
what have we got to edit out there? Sorry.
Shirt
together. Shirt. There we go.
I mean, I particularly like the fact that Ewan and Carl have told me that I don't have to renew my Mobile Me subscription for £60 and I get an extra year anyway. So I like that. Yeah. Even if they did nothing else, they've saved me £60.
And I'm 2 weeks into my current one, so I'm desperately trying to see if I can cancel it.
They will refund you the money.
Yes.
Yeah.
At some point in the future, you'll get your money back. But yeah, it's a shame. It just sounds like, you know, all the bits that are really exciting, iTunes Match is basically just a massive amnesty on music file sharing.
Just going back to MobileMe there, the one question I've got is, because when I didn't pay my MobileMe account and I was waiting to see if it was going to come out free before I renewed it, the one thing that disappeared was my MobileMe address. So ewan@me.com went entirely.
But so, that's the thing, that you should have that back now.
No, I've got it back now because I've paid the subscription. But what I'm saying is, if I cancel the subscription, is my email address going to disappear again?
Yes, it will.
But I like the email address. People have got the email address.
Yeah, well, they don't cancel it then.
It's actually what my developer license is registered under with Apple. And they're going to take it away if I cancel MobileMe.
They will do if you cancelled it. If you keep it, you'll get a pro rata refund when iCloud goes live.
Oh, okay.
That's your best bet, actually. You know, they'll sort of reinverse you somewhat when you guys get the iCloud in 2012.
I might need you to have a word with your trickling leak thing and see what they can do for me in the background.
Well, we'll get the rest of it. We're just not going to get the iTunes part of it, are we? I mean, we'll get iCloud. We'll get the calendar syncing.
Well, you already got it.
Coming. Yeah, but we'll just be music.
Unless you hadn't noticed, you've got little iClouds have popped up in your App Store already for download and transfer.
Apps that I downloaded long ago.
Well, the other thing is, if you go back to your purchase history, they're all there. And the other thing that's quite nice is you can look at all the applications you ever purchased, or you can refine the list by applications which aren't on the phone, which is really, really nice, because I went through and I was like, which applications have I not got? And it was dead easy to go through. The only criticism was the fact that periodically when I down something, it would go start to the top of the list and you're like, oh, come on, and I've skimmed through. And the one thing that really scared me was I'd got pages and pages and pages of applications which weren't on the phone, and I'm scared to death to work out how much I've spent. And some of them, I've got iFart and stuff like that. You know, what on earth were you thinking, Rankin?
What's nice about that, though, is it's also showing up in iOS, you know, 4.3.
Yeah, you guys already got it.
Yeah. It's really nice. I mean, and what's cool about it is apps that are actually not even available in the App Store anymore, the ones that have actually been banned or just out, you actually have access to those.
Mm. One of the things that was also nice was that all of the iWork stuff has now gone into the cloud as well. So you can access your docs anywhere, all the time, all devices, providing you've got the software, obviously.
Yeah, I'm just a bit worried because I've got quite a lot of photos for customers to download off of MobileMe, and I'm just, because they sent me something about clicking this and doing that, and I was just a bit worried that I'm going to lose everything. I don't want to have to re-upload it all, so I'm just sitting here hoping it all goes away.
No, you need to get it down off there before now, mate. Trust me, based on what I've had with my emails.
Oh, well, I've got it all backed up. It took me ages to sort it all out into the proper folders for people to download. And it would be really nice if they put the download counter back on. They took that off a couple of years ago, and it was really, really useful to know how many people had downloaded a certain file. But out of the blue, they decided we no longer needed that because it was useful, and they took it away.
Yeah.
So I want that back, please.
Jolly good. Well done.
Thank you.
I can't think there was anything else. I mean, we got the big data center picture that we showed, but I mean, was there anything else in there that really kind of piqued the interest, or were we kind of done with it?
I think it's a wait and see game now. I mean, particularly for you guys. I mean, I honestly think, I know the BPIs, the RIA, all of these places are just a pain in the butt, really, but I'm quite confident that the even though it may be not till 2012, I'm quite confident you guys will have access to iTunes cloud, and for sure what music you've already purchased that you can load into the store already. So have just no fear.
Just as a matter of fact, the last couple of times that they've done a keynote, they're announcing things a long way in advance. It's, for instance, Lion. There was very little about Lion that we didn't know. And there's very little about Lion we haven't known for quite a long time. Are Apple changing their method of delivery? Because in the old days it was, what are they going to announce? We've got a vague idea, but it's all going to be really exciting. We're all going to be blown away, and it's all going to happen. He's going to click a button, and it's available there and then. They seem to have changed their format. They seem to let us know everything, and it's somehow it's lost that, wow, I can't believe he's just done that. Isn't that incredible? And it's available at 6 o'clock.
Well, they let a lot
get excited.
They let an awful lot of the names out of the bag as well earlier. I think that's probably because the front of the Moscone Center is almost completely glass, and they were never going to keep any of the
Yeah, it's just strange.
Banners covered up.
Part of the excitement of the keynote is what was going to happen. And this, all this keynote was dotting the I's and crossing the T's. There was very little in there that was, you know, new and exciting.
Mm.
But the keynote itself was exciting. It was exciting to watch. I don't know why. I mean, it was nice to see Steve back up on stage. I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed this one a heck of a lot better than the one that we had with the iPad launch. iPad 2, should I say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seemed to have taken away that wow factor. It just struck me as, we know an awful lot about what's going to be said, which is just something that you couldn't have said a couple of years ago.
Mm, definitely.
I just missed that excitement, that's all.
It's too predictable. Oh, Apple, yes. You've become predictable. How dare you?
They're going to buy Microsoft.
Before we go any further, we've got to mention our sponsors. We've got some fantastic people looking after us at the moment. The first one to mention is the big one, of course, UK2.net. They're the people that pick up all the bandwidth charges for everything that we produce. Now, we've got several shows running on the network. You'll see them if you go to bageltechnews.com. They're on the right-hand side. At the moment, we're losing about 4 terabytes. We've gone up a whole terabyte since last month. 4 terabytes have disappeared in May off the servers, and it's all audio. There's no video gone off of that yet, so it scares the hell out of me if we then start doing video podcasting. But thanks for peeking around the corner, Kyle. the thing that we need you to do, please, if you possibly can, is navigate yourself to bageltechnews.com, our homepage, there it is, and then scroll down to the bottom and you'll see the UK2 logo on the left-hand side. Now, if you click that logo, they will know that we have sent you. It doesn't matter if you don't buy anything. They will know if you buy anything, and they'll credit us with it and say thank you very much. We won't get any money for it, but we'll get the credit and kudos for it. If you go and just sign into your account, they'll also know that you're an existing customer who's come from Bageltech, so you reinforce that way. Just by clicking that link, you are supporting this podcasting network and keeping us alive. So please, 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 whatever you're doing right this minute, stop and go and do that. If you go and buy anything, then here's the real big treat. Anything that you buy, stick it all in your basket, get to the end and check out, and when you look for the coupon code at the bottom, type in Bageltech, all one word, and you will get 15% off your basket. Doesn't matter what you've put in there, whether it's e-commerce stuff, whether it's domain names, whether it's VPS servers, or whether it's co-location services, you will get a full 15%, not a 10%, which they give everyone else. This is only Bageltech. Bageltech are getting 15% off all services. So please support UK2.net if you possibly can. Certainly use the click through. Please, that makes an enormous difference to us. And we will stay on the air as a result. If UK2 walked away at this minute, you know, forget Libsyn and all those kind of services, they couldn't cope with the volume of data that we've got going off the service. We'd be out, we'd be finished, and that's the end of it. We do appreciate it. We appreciate you listening. Please, please, please support us, UK2, in return. Also, Don McAllister's there. He's giving you 50%. Off your first 3 months membership to Screencast Online. Click on there. And if you're looking for the Mac software for malware, then you can't beat Sophos. They're not paying us a penny for that. They're getting no support and sponsorship whatsoever off it. We just honestly believe that theirs is the best. We've had a lot of compliments this week. Few people with emails saying we've tried it based on your recommendation. Can't even notice that it's running. Thank you ever so much. Last thing to mention is the people that are giving us our video presentation stuff is Wirecast. They gave us a free copy to run, firstly to trial and then to run. And what they've also done is they like the fact that we've had a few people from Bageltech have gone along and mentioned us. They'd like to support us. So what they've done is given us 4 copies of Wirecast to give away free of charge. This is $500 worth of software, nothing to sniff at. And if you send us an email titled Wirecast Competition, all you got to do is go to the homepage again and look for the Wirecast logo and click on it. And you send us an email that says I deserve a copy of Wirecast because, then if your entry is funny enough and witty enough, then we'll send you a copy of Wirecast. There you go. So please click on that. They've been looking after us too. Excuse me. Have we got any cool thingies, Kyle? Would you like to start us off?
Yes, I would. This is a little freebie thing that I don't know if you can hear that or not.
Very George Harrison, Beatles.
La la la. I don't know. I kind of like it's a. I believe it's called a tenpura. It's an Indian instrument. And I like the little apps and stuff in the store, and a lot of them are getting really good. And for that being free, it actually sounds pretty good.
It does.
It's free. I actually used it to just play around with on a recording. I had a guitar, and I don't know why. I just felt an Indian vibe, and there it was. And I don't know. You can't beat it. You can do a whole bunch of different changes and things to it and tune it and what have you. And I don't know. I like it. It's free.
Free music apps. We like those.
Yeah. A Tempura Touch is what it's called.
My cousin in the 70s went to see Ravi Shankar, was it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sitar player, yeah.
And he came out with a thing about everyone clapping after he came on the stage and twanged his sitar for the first few moments. And then he leaned forward to the microphone and said, "I'm glad you like my tuning." Andrew, have you got a cool thing for us?
Yeah, two little cool. One cheapy quick thing is it seems to me like the very definition of casual gaming. It's a little iPad and iPhone game called Flick Football.
I saw your tweet on this morning. It did intrigue me.
Oh, it's just so addictive. It's just Flick Football. It's just a little goalkeeper, and you've got a football, and you flick with your finger at the goal, and you can do curves, curve it around the keeper, try and hit like bonus point things in the goal, and it's just, you know, 2 minutes, bish bash. The gameplay is really nice, and it's a good looking little game, and it's free, and which is really good.
There's a lot of there's a paid version as well, isn't there?
There's a paid version, but the free version seems
is this the one from Neon?
Yes, Neon Play, who are good, a Sawyer Ancestor based company. Good self. So, yeah, sort of one up for the locals there. Yeah, I just got insane. I downloaded it, and I don't even like football, and I just thought, oh, I'll give that a go. And over the last few days, I've become insanely addicted to beating my high score.
Very good.
Yes. And the other one is slightly more sensible, is one I've been using on my bike called Runkeeper Pro, which I believe was paid for. It might even be free now, which is a really great little GPS-based sort of exercise activity monitor that does, you take it with you when you cycle or walk or run, or it does say on the app when you swim, but I haven't worked out how the hell that works. But it just keeps track of you on and where you go, and you can plot your course on the map, shows you your calories, so all the stuff, you know, your heartbeat, energy expenditure. It doesn't do anything groundbreaking, but it does it really well. And go out for a nice cycle at the weekend, and it's a real motivator to be able to look back where you've been. You can see how fast you went, plotted against the gradient of the hill you were going up and stuff.
Well, that's good, because I was going to say, let's stop before we get into what gets Andy's pulse racing.
We've not mentioned the word this week.
No, we haven't. Well,
cucumbers.
Done. Cucumbers. German cucumbers, especially. Alex, what have you got for us?
Right. It's an app that I bought as, it's called FTP on the Go, and I brought the Pro version. It's an app for the iPhone, and it also works on the iPad. And it is, as it says, it's a FTP client on the Go. I use this. It's got quite a lot of functionality, which, you know, at first I didn't realize. I was working on a bit of coding that wasn't working, and I had to go to work, and I just got so infuriated that I couldn't get it to work. And I had this brilliant idea while I was working. So I thought, can I do this from my iPhone? And it turned out I could. So I bought this software. I got into the website I was building. I rewrote the coding. It tested it for me. It all worked. It was brilliant. And I've used it ever since. This is $5.99. There is a FTP on the Go, which isn't Pro. I'm not sure what the difference is, but that's only $3.99. But it's got, you can edit pictures. You can upload news pictures. You can do various really quite clever things on your iPhone FTP wise, so I highly recommend it, especially if you're frustrated as I was.
Jolly good, very good pick. My selection is an oldie, a very, very oldie, but a very, very goodie. And the reason I'm picking it is because of customer service.
Mobile Me.
Oh, hell no.
I thought you said, what about me?
I thought he'd already gone. Well, the thing was, the reason that spooked me is because I completely forgot the cool thing is last night in the big show. I just ended the bloody show. I was like, oh, what have I done? My pick is ChronoSync for the Mac. Now, I'm sure, I can't believe that there's any person who listens to this show that hasn't heard of ChronoSync. But the one thing that's really good about them that I find is that because I lost all my emails originally, I needed ChronoSync back, and I reinstalled it all, and I couldn't find an activation code key. So I tried to put in the email I purchased it from, and it said, no, that's not coming up in our records. There may not be a problem. Just send us an email to this address, and we'll send it back to you. And I literally sent them an email saying, hi, my name's Ewan Rankin, and I sent it from what I thought was the purchase email address, which it may or may not have been, the ones that have been already rejected by the server. Hi, my name's Ewan Rankin. I purchased ChronoSync a couple of years ago. I need a new activation key, please. And within 2 hours, I'd got an email back from them. Here's your new activation key. Sorry for any inconvenience. Thank you very much. Sure. So I haven't had to buy ChronoSync again, and I've set it all up, set them all up for mirroring my movies drive and my TV folders and stuff like that for iTunes, and it's running smooth as silk, and it just works as well. So it is a good piece of software, not just the customer services. So ChronoSync, there you go. That's my pick. Where can we get a hold of you? And we're finished, I think. Kyle?
Simple place, Twitter, twitter.com/KyleSwiger.
Now we're going to do media again, aren't we? We've had a little rethink on the format of media, and media is going to start again after the break.
Yeah, it sure is. It's getting a reboot. We'll call it the Thunderbolt version.
Media reboot. So after this show, stick around and have a listen to the media show in its new revamp format, and you'll be able to be the first. Andrew, yeah. Where can we get a hold of you?
You can get hold of me in the market on Wednesday in Cirencester in the Corn Hall.
How's the market going? As ever.
Nobody famous again last week.
You still haven't flogged anything to Princess Anne?
No. or you can just pop along to Twitter and hit the at Dr. Happy Mac button and join in the conversation.
Is that the title for the show today, you think? Flogging Princess Anne?
Yeah.
Whipping Princess Anne Day.
You can get away with that when Don isn't here.
Oh, never mind. There goes the knighthood. And Alex, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
At Alex G Fox on Twitter, you think?
Thanks, mate. We'll see you again next week. We'll be back. The usual gang will be here. Will be back, and Don McAllister will be back, and we'll have a good soiree through the week's tech news. I think it's the third Friday, isn't it? So Andy will be back as well. Andy and Natka will be here too. So there we go. We'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.